Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
What questions have you got about the Catholic faith? Ever wish there was someone you could go to get straightforward and understandable answers about what the church believes? Well, today is Open Forum here on Catholic Answers Live. I am your host, Cy Kellett. And if you have religious or moral questions, this is the place to be. Give us a call, 888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. And the phone lines can get a little bit full during Open Forum. So if you have a question, this is a good time to start dialing that number, 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is Jimmy Akin, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and the author of A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One. Finish that for me.
I already wrote the book. Oh. So I finished it already.
Because, Jimmy, I had your book in my hand and I just put it down and I can't see it here. So I was remember the end of the title.
I believe the end of the subtitle is Towards Being a Better Apologist.
Yeah, right. And it does work. Mm-hmm. It does work, yeah. Too. And I was reading your blog.
Oh, okay.
At jimmyakin.com.
Yeah.
And it was about Jesus and basketball.
Oh, yes, right.
And what would happen if LeBron James taught Jesus how to play basketball.
Yeah. This was a question that someone – I didn't come up with this on my own. Someone emailed me this and was asking, you know, as a thought exercise in understanding Christ's divine nature and human nature and how they relate.
Yeah, and it was fascinating. I really was struck by the quote you had in there from Pope Benedict, mm-hmm. from his book. And then to try to think through what it is that Jesus is fully man – at mm-hmm. the same time that he's fully God. Like,
right.
I think it's maybe not easier, but it's almost easier to think, oh, fully God. Okay, we get that. Mm-hmm. But to be fully man while at the same time being fully God, it's pretty hard to get your mind around.
Well,
that.
And as Pope Benedict indicates in that quote, which people can access at jimmyakin.com, we can't really fully understand the relationship between Christ's two natures. But we can understand certain things and we can mm-hmm. At least make educated estimates of right. how certain things in Jesus' experience would have worked. And so that's what I'm doing in that post.
And you came down finally though on this that even if LeBron James had taught Jesus how to play basketball, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean Jesus would be the best basketball player in the world.
Doesn't automatically mean that unless he were to invoke his miraculous powers.
Right, which you say in the piece, he only really does that in the Gospels when we see in service of his mission.
Correct.
He doesn't do it for his own aggrandizement.
Right, and this corresponds, as the Catechism points out, to his emptying himself and taking the form of a servant in human form.
Well, I was going to put a smart aleck post on, you know, like a reply.
A reply, sure.
Say, but if Larry Bird taught him how to play basketball, then he would be the greatest basketball player. But
I'll take your word on that. I'm not a sports fan, so I don't even really know. I kind of remember who Larry Bird was. I kind of know who LeBron James is, but
it's not really
it's not within my orbit. Well, other things are in my orbit.
Yeah.
Like just yesterday.
What was in your orbit yesterday?
I was checking on one of the science blogs that I go to every day, and they had a link to a post called with the title "Physicists Develop Quantum Model for Humor." And I'm like, "Physicists develop quantum model for humor? Don't make me laugh." And today they had the headline "Hopes Fade for Life in TRAPPIST System." And when you're Catholic, you know, that just has a whole different meaning.
There is like a star system called the TRAPPIST system?
Yeah, it's called the TRAPPIST-1 system. And recently we found like seven rocky Earths, you know, kind of Earth-sized rocky planets orbiting it. Three of them at least seem to be in the habitable zone for this star. But they say they've run some calculations and they're not as optimistic about would these planets actually support life or not. But, you know, we'll have to wait till we go there.
Yeah, I guess so. And Trappists.
Have some Trappists.
Trappists here, yeah. They do have, they're capable of having a very full life.
That's what
no,
I understand.
Thomas Merton.
Yeah.
And among many, many others. I wonder if as a Trappist you get tired of people mentioning Thomas Merton. Like, you know, there are other ones of us. I would imagine that would get a little tiring.
Yep, I would imagine.
And there I just did.
But they do have a very full life, except when they're fasting.
And they have a very, well, I was going to say they have a very empty life, but.
Well, when they're fasting.
All right. Would it be all right? 888-318-7884 is the number. It is open forum. Oh, I want to say something before I go to begin.
Yeah.
I'm a really big fan of LeBron James.
Uh-huh.
So it was just going to be a
basketball player, I understand.
But I don't want anybody to think that I'm denigrating LeBron James. He's the greatest basketball player on earth and has been for like 10 years.
Okay.
So I especially our listeners in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
Which I hope
is
we still
where
have
he's
them.
From?
Yeah, he's from Cleveland.
Okay.
And he actually grew up in Cleveland, and he plays there. It's one of those beautiful hometown boy kind of things.
Nice.
Again, 888-318-7884 is the number. It is open forum. So any questions you have, not questions on sports, unless they relate to whether or not Jesus could have played that sport, because you will get a very interesting answer from Jimmy Akin. But any question you've got on the life of faith or the moral life, we are very happy to take those. We will go now to Steve in Presque Isle, Maine, listening on WEGP. Steve, thank you so much for being with us here on Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you, Sly. And Jimmy, good to talk to you again. I haven't talked to you in months. My question is, I'm looking over an obituary of a person here in Presque Isle, or Lewiston, Maine, actually, who was a devout Roman Catholic. In his lifetime, he was a Eucharistic minister.
Okay.
Now, he has 9 children and 25 grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
What is a Eucharistic minister? What kind of position is that in a church?
Well, it's a misnomer. That's not a term that the church uses in its official documents. Proper term is minister of Holy Communion, and that's a person who distributes communion at Mass. And there are two types of ministers of Holy Communion. The first type are ordinary ministers of Holy Communion, and that would be people like a priest or a deacon or a formally instituted acolyte, of which there are not very many, not these days anyway in the Latin Rite. Then there are what are known as extraordinary ministers of Holy Communion. And that's unless this guy was a deacon, then that's probably what they mean. They probably mean that he was an extraordinary minister of Holy Communion. And extraordinary ministers are people who are typically lay people. They would be lay people, but typically they're just ordinary lay people. They're not like in religious orders, for example. And they also distribute Holy Communion at Mass. The reason they're called extraordinary is because they're used and are meant to be used on a somewhat extraordinary basis. That is, they shouldn't be used in preference to the ordinary ministers like priests and deacons. So if your parish has enough priests and deacons to distribute Holy Communion in a reasonable amount of time to the people coming for communion, then you should use the priests and deacons first. But if there are so many people, and frankly this is true in a lot of American Catholic parishes, if there's so many people coming that it would unduly prolong the distribution of communion, then lay people can be deputized to serve Holy Communion on what's known as an extraordinary basis. Extraordinary in this case doesn't mean that they don't do it regularly, because if you've got, you know, a lot of people coming to a Mass, then they may need extraordinary ministers of Holy Communion on a regular basis. But it does mean that they're not to be used in preference to the ordinary ministers who may be available.
Okay, Steve?
Thank you, Jimmy.
Sure thing.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Call and ask Jimmy your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
It was 100 years ago that our Blessed Mother appeared to three children in Fatima, Portugal, and Catholic Answers Magazine is marking the anniversary with a very special issue. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 888-291-8000 or by going to Catholic.com. Getting Fatima right, exploding the myths of Fatima, and a closer look at our Blessed Mother. Just a few of the articles to look forward to. You don't want to miss this very special issue highlighting this hallmark event in Catholic history. Don't wait another moment to subscribe. Call 888-291-8000 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Francis reminds us that it does not take a specialized degree in theology to become a great evangelist. We're all called to evangelize. Think about the woman at the well. After she encountered Jesus, she immediately went into the city and invited others to meet him as she had. You and I can go out now and do the same. And St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. Get involved today by contacting us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 18:21, Peter asked Jesus, "Lord, if my brother sins against me, how often must I forgive him? As many as seven times?" Jesus answered, "I say to you, not seven times, but 77 times." He then went on to tell him a story of a servant who was unwilling to offer to one who was indebted to him the same mercy he himself had just received. This matter touches us far more directly than we might at first think. Who do you refuse to forgive? Or better, who do you resent? Or better, who is it that really gets under your skin? Bullseye! Chances are such a person is not asking to be forgiven. But are we willing to forgive such persons should they ask? Better to give thanks for their presence in our lives. Gratitude humbles us, removes resentment, and heals us on all sides. God likes our gratitude, and He always deserves it. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Happy to have you with us today on Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin is our guest. Jimmy Akin, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and author of A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist. I got it that time.
Awesome.
It helped that I had it in front of me.
Uh-huh, sure.
That made
that
a lot
always
better.
Helps.
Open forum means you can call with any question you've got on religion, morals, anything in that general area. We're happy to take. And we go now to Rosemary in Reno, Nevada, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. Rosemary, you're on with Jimmy Akin.
Hi. I want to say God bless you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Jimmy, here is my question.
Okay.
At Mass yesterday, one of the men that I serve with was talking to me about something, and then he said the Muslims have the same God as we.
Mm-hmm.
And I answered very quickly, and I said, they do not.
Mm.
Then when I walked out, I thought I had to call you in order to get my facts straight.
Okay.
So I'm going to hang up and listen to you.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you called, and I mean, we always enjoy talking with folks and fielding their questions. But in this case, the church's understanding is that Muslims do worship God. Now, that they don't understand God the same way we do. For example, they don't believe that Jesus is God, and they don't believe that the Holy Spirit is God. So they have an incomplete understanding of the divine nature and, in some degree, an erroneous understanding of the divine nature. But that doesn't mean that they aren't genuinely directing their prayers towards the creator of the universe. They are. It doesn't mean they're not genuinely directing their prayers to the God of Abraham, the God who appeared to Abraham. They are. And so in that sense, they are worshiping God, and they're worshiping the true God. They just have some incomplete understanding and to some extent erroneous understandings about God, such as if they were, you know, to deny that Jesus is God, which they do, that's an error. But it doesn't mean that they don't have a genuine understanding or relationship with God any more than it means Jewish people don't. Because Jewish people also, typically, unless they're Christian Jews, they don't understand that God is a Trinity. They don't believe that Jesus is God. But that's never stopped the church from recognizing that Jewish people do worship God. They're worshiping the Creator. They're worshiping the God who appeared to Abraham. And God knows that when he receives their prayers. They know that God knows that they're talking to him, even if they have some incomplete and even potentially erroneous ideas about God. It's kind of like, and there are various analogies I could use here. One of them is it's kind of like addressing your prayers to God in a way is kind of like sending somebody email. In order to get your email to somebody, you just need their correct address. And as long as you know that, then the email will get there. But that doesn't mean you know everything about that person. Sometimes I'll email people, I'll know very little about the person. But I may even have some erroneous ideas about the person. But as long as I address it correctly, then that person will get my email and potentially can respond. As long as you thus send your email to creator@universe.reality, God will know you're talking to him. And so you can have erroneous or incomplete ideas about God, and he'll still know that you're trying to reach out to him and contact him by prayer. Another analogy that is sometimes helpful, you know, I like superheroes. Suppose, Cy, that you were Batman.
Oh, wait. Oh, this okay. is good. So okay, I'm enjoying this one already.
You get off yeah. the air.
Yes, Jimmy.
You go out at night and fight crime.
Yes,
okay? Well, I would know you as Cy Kellett, mild-mannered radio host, but I wouldn't know that you're Batman. And in order to throw people off the trail of your secret identity, you might even have arranged to mislead people so that you might have another person in the Batman suit appearing one day alongside you. So people like me would form the belief Cy Kellett is not Batman because I've seen them together. Well, in that case, you really would be Batman, but I would only know you as Cy Kellett, and I might even have erroneous ideas about you like Cy Kellett is not Batman. Well, I would still have a genuine relationship with you when I talk to you, like here on the air. I'm genuinely talking to Cy Kellett, even though I have an incomplete and even erroneous understanding of Cy Kellett because I don't realize and don't believe that he's also Batman.
This is hitting awful close to the truth, Jimmy.
Well,
about me.
You see,
this is coming awful close.
Yeah. Well, that's why I picked this analogy. So I knew you'd be able to relate to it. And that's just another illustration.
I'm enjoying playing along.
Yeah, that's another illustration of how people can have incomplete or yeah. even erroneous ideas about someone and yet have an actual relationship with them. And so that's the church's understanding of the relationship that Muslims have with God. If you read in the Second Vatican Council, it talks about this, and that passage from the Second Vatican Council is quoted in the Catechism of the Catholic Church.
Thank you, Rose Marie, very much for that question. I really like when I get to be the superhero in your mm-hmm. in your analogies. And you gave out God's email address too.
Well,
God at universe.reality.
Yeah,
I'm going to try that. I'm going to see what happens.
You don't even have to use email to talk to God.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. I don't need email as a mediator. I have one mediator.
Yeah.
Anonymous in Arcadia, California. You are next listening on 930 AM Immaculate Heart Radio. Anonymous, you are on with Jimmy Akin.
Hello, yes. I actually had one question that mm-hmm. I had forgotten, but I just remembered. So I technically have two questions, but they shouldn't take that long if I could try to
Let's
ask them.
Get to them so they'll take even less time.
All right. Thank you. The first one is, as far I'm approaching a 25-year anniversary.
Congratulations.
And thank you very much. Is it necessary to renew your vows? Is it supposed to be done in the context of the Mass? Or is it just something optional? How does that work?
Well, it would be so tempting here to briefly deceive you and tell you that you have to or your marriage expires. But no, marriage is a for life thing. And so when you first validly exchanged your vows back at the beginning of your marriage, you were married for life. So there is no renewals necessary, no additional fees or surcharges, no new subscriptions, nothing like that. You're already married for life. However, if as a gesture of your love for your wife, you'd like to renew your vows, then that's something that people sometimes do. And it's not an actual marriage because you're already actually married, but it can be done as an expression of one's love and as a renewal of that commitment, which already is there. So it's something you can do. It is not, to my knowledge, usually done in Mass because it's not an official liturgical function, and so there's no provision for it in the texts of the Mass. But it's often done in churches. In fact, if you go to Cana in Israel, where Jesus was at the wedding of Cana, and you go to the Catholic Church there, it's very common for visiting Catholic pilgrim couples who are married to renew their vows right there. And this is typically done by a priest. Your priest in your parish potentially could do it. I would suggest just if you're interested in it, saying, you know, my wife and I are coming up on this anniversary. We'd like to renew our vows. Is there a way we could do that here? Could you do it or could you recommend someone to do it? And see what your priest says.
Okay.
What's your other question?
Thank you very much. I was defending the perpetual virginity of Mary with somebody, and I brought up the fact that in James it calls him the brother of the Lord, or I think it's in Galatians, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And I referenced to them that it mentions that he's as an apostle, so therefore it's not because of the what each apostle, obviously none of them were actually blood brothers of our Lord. That it was clearly indicating, you know, that it wasn't his brother, but they came up with this notion. There's actually three James, mm-hmm. the two James in the list of the apostles, and there's a third one. This is the brother of the Lord. Is that even accurate, or is that a new invented scholarship? Or?
That is the standard understanding among most scholars today. There has been a counter tradition proposing that one of the 12 who is named James the son of Alphaeus is also the James known as the brother of the Lord, and that has been advocated by various people in church history. It's a respectable view. It's possible. Personally, I'm disinclined towards that because if you read in the Gospel of John says that during the time of his ministry, Jesus's brothers did not believe in him. And so even though they later came to believe in him, they didn't when he was actively ministering. And since the apostles were with Jesus during the whole course of his ministry, that would suggest that none of the apostles were Jesus's brethren. And they may have had more distant relations, but the ones that the New Testament talks about as Jesus's brothers don't, to my mind, at least the evidence doesn't fit well with the idea that any of them were among the 12, especially James, because James is the one who's named first. Whenever we get a list of the Lord's brothers, that would indicate he's the oldest. And if the oldest of his brothers believed in him, then we would expect that that John would note that. Because he would be the most influential of all the brothers. And so if John simply says, as he does, that his brethren didn't believe in him, then that would seem to include the eldest brother, who is James. So that's what I'd have to say about that. An alternative understanding of who this James is that he was not a half-brother through Mary, but a step-brother through Joseph. That's the earliest understanding we have on record of who he and the other brothers were, that they were stepbrothers through Joseph. Another theory that was popularized in the 300s is the idea that they were cousins. But on either of those theories, you're not required to say that that they were members of the 12. That's an independent hypothesis.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. And congratulations on 25 years of marriage. That's extraordinary. And well, I hope you do get your – well, you said you can go to Cana. Do you think you have to make a – you have to prearrange that?
No, they just do it. They have groups of pilgrims. And like when I've been with Father Mitch Pacowa, he's done that for the pilgrims in his tour group. And I know Steve Ray, when he does tours, he arranges to have a priest there who can do it and stuff.
All right. I got a few years to plan for my 25th.
Hey,
Jimmy Akin is our guest today on Catholic Answers Live. It's open forum. Any question you've got on religion or morals, we are happy to take it this hour. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
It was 100 years ago that our Blessed Mother appeared to three children in Fatima, Portugal, and Catholic Answers Magazine is marking the anniversary with a very special issue. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 888-291-8000 or by going to Catholic.com. Getting Fatima right, exploding the myths of Fatima, and a closer look at our Blessed Mother. Just a few of the articles to look forward to. You don't want to miss this very special issue highlighting this hallmark event in Catholic history. Don't wait another moment to subscribe. Call 888-291-8000 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
What do the Pharisees, pagan emperors, the Nazis, and the Quran all have in common? All were enemies of the faith who admitted crucial facts that undermined their own position. In his new book, Hostile Witnesses, How the Historic Enemies of the Church Prove Christianity, author Gary Machuda looks at dozens of Christianity's most notorious foes from biblical times through the 20th century and draws from their words and deeds surprising testimony to gospel truths. Rich in research and written with clarity and force, Hostile Witnesses is a unique contribution to Catholic apologetics, one that speaks with special urgency to a modern world in which the faith is once again under attack. If you love apologetics, you need to order your copy of Hostile Witnesses today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area.
Welcome back to Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live. Thank you so much for being with us today. Open Forum for 2 hours. Next hour, Patrick Madrid will be here. At least we are told Patrick Madrid will be here, and I'm hopeful that he will. This hour, we have Jimmy Akin with us, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and author of many things, and you can find him at jimmyakin.com if you'd like to see his blogging. 888-318-7884 is the number. I can't believe you were tempted to tell that man that he needed to renew his marriage or it would expire.
I was tempted, not – I didn't actually do it. I resisted the temptation.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's beautiful. That's good. Resist temptation and the devil flees. That's what I've heard.
Yep.
Is that the truth?
Up to a point.
All right. We got no devil in here with us today then. Helen in Pennsylvania listening
on – we just had a discussion about things we don't know about each other, so –
Oh, is one of the possibilities that you are demonic?
No.
I would be shocked.
No, there's no possibility of that at all.
Well, I'm Batman then. Okay. If that's the case, I'm Batman. Helen, I'm sorry to keep you waiting. Helen in Pennsylvania listening on 1420 AM. You are on with Jimmy Akin.
One of the questions, my son and I have really hit hard times. I mean, really bad hard times where at one point we were homeless living in our car. And people say one thing, well, you know, you pray. And I says, well, that's all I've been doing. I've been in like 2 hours in church every day. Go, oh, well, then it's not the will of God. Well, what's the sense of praying if God's will is that I'm out on the street freezing cold and I'm 68 years old and my son doesn't have money to go to school? I mean, I'm asking God for help, and there is none coming because it's not his will. Well, like my son says, Mom, stop praying, and whatever his will be, will be. Heck, I mean, and I don't know what the answer is.
So are you in this situation currently?
Yes.
Okay. Well, First of all, I want to express compassion for you and for everybody in situations like this because it can be very trying. I've been in similar situations in my life. When my wife passed away, you know, all of a sudden, in just overnight, there was $40,000 in medical bills and I was a starving grad student and had no money to pay. And so I remember times in my life where even before my wife passed away, where the two of us were going through the cushions of our couch trying to find enough money to go get food to eat. So I have a definite understanding for people in your situation. And there are resources that should be available to you. Now, I don't know in your area specifically what those are. What I would do is contact your local parish. You mentioned going to church to pray. I would contact the local parish. They frequently have food pantries. They also can get you connected with local assistance organizations. Catholic Charities is an organization that should have an office in your local area. There are other ones as well. Sometimes there are interfaith shelters to provide people shelter at night so that they won't have to be out in the cold. And all of those are things – I know we have them here in San Diego. I know they have them in other places. And I'm sure that there are resources in your area that – can provide assistance to you and your son. In terms of your question about prayer, well, there's no way of establishing what God's will is up front until you try praying. However, simply because what you're praying for doesn't automatically materialize doesn't mean that it's not God's will. And sometimes people are too quick to conclude that something is not God's will simply because it hasn't happened quickly. In fact, in the Gospels, Jesus tells the parable of the unjust judge, specifically Luke says, to encourage the disciples always to pray and never give up. And so if the assistance that you're looking for is something that isn't immediately forthcoming, then I would say keep praying because we have a pretty good idea that God wants people to have the basics of things that you need in life, like food and shelter and things like that. And he may tolerate situations where people don't have those, especially on a temporary basis. But fundamentally, we can pretty much count on God's will, at least in the vast majority of circumstances, as being in favor of people having those things. And so I would say keep praying about them. I don't know that I would say you need to pray for 2 hours a day in church about them. But in addition to prayer, I would also take action towards those goals because God didn't just give you the ability to pray. He also gave you the ability to talk to other people and to reach out to other people and to work with other people to try to improve your situation for you and your son. And so I would say talk to the local parish, talk to your local Catholic Charities organization, talk to other charities if you need to, go to classes that could potentially help you find some kind of additional income, maybe a part-time job or even a full-time job. I know you mentioned you're 68, and so that may or may not be something that is easy to find, but it's something that at least could be an additional avenue of help for you and your son. Same thing with your son. I'd encourage him to, and I don't have the details of his situation, but to the extent that he's able to, say, get a job to help pay for his schooling, that would be a good thing to do as well. And that's one of the things that the local assistance organizations can help you with. And so I'd offer those thoughts, and I'll also be praying for you and encourage our listeners to pray both for you and your son and for everyone in similar situations.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you, Helen, very much for that call. Jimmy, folks are watching on YouTube Live, Facebook Live, and Periscope.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I believe in Periscope. I keep forgetting to look it up, but I'm told that they're watching on Periscope.
Uh-huh.
And Natalie in Germany is watching on Facebook Live, and she typed in the following question. If you're watching on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope, you're welcome to call the number 888-318-7884, but you can also type in your question there, and if we can, we will get to it. Natalie asks this, Jimmy, if someone in life has requested that none should pray for their soul after death, should that request be honored? Could an angry soul retaliate?
Okay. the answer is such a request should not be honored because God wants us to reach out to him in love for other people, for his fellow creatures. And even if someone in life did not want you to pray for them, that doesn't mean, number one, that they don't need your prayers. They may well. They may be in a state where, you know, they died hopefully in God's friendship, but in need of some purification, and your prayers could be of assistance to them. Also, if they're in that situation, they're going to have a different perspective than they did in life. They're going to have a clearer vision and understanding of God at this point, and they will appreciate the prayer at that point. So both because they may need it, and because at this point, if they need it, they will want it, it's good to go ahead and pray for them. If someone died completely outside of God's friendship, if they turned their back on him in a fundamental way, and that's something we can never know in this life. Even when someone dies not believing in God, we don't know that they weren't still open to him on some fundamental level and could be with him in the afterlife. So we never give up on hoping for anyone's salvation. But suppose that they did definitively exclude God fundamentally, and so they died outside of his friendship and regrettably are not with him in the afterlife. Well, in that case, there is no basis in the Bible or in Catholic tradition for saying a soul in that condition can harm you. And so they wouldn't be able to retaliate. Now, since we don't have a lot of knowledge about souls in this condition, the church doesn't have a lot of teachings about this, but if this were a serious worry, it would have shown up and the church would have a teaching on it. So don't worry about potential retaliation. Just focus on loving other people and loving God.
And thank you very much, Natalie, joining us from Germany on Facebook Live. And thanks to all of you who have joined us on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope. We go now to Jim in Brighton, Michigan. Listening on Ave Maria Radio. Jim, you're on with Jimmy Akin.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have not heard a whole lot. We're in Michigan, and I assume that it's going to be on the ballot here about legalization of marijuana, but also the medical marijuana exists here in our state. And I don't see a lot of response or any kind of, opinion from the church. Maybe they're not putting it out yet. But is there a position at this point from the Catholic Church on these two areas?
On medical marijuana and recreational marijuana? And should they be allowed legally?
Well, I should say, does the church have a position on them? For example, if I was a patient that had some type of illness where my doctor said you should be consuming marijuana, is that acceptable within the church?
Okay. Assuming that your doctor is right, now in assessing that somebody should be pursuing a particular course of treatment, there need to be several facts that are verified. Number one, that there's a genuine condition, a medical condition that the person has. Number two, that this treatment will effectively address it. Number three, that there aren't better alternatives. Such as alternatives that are more effective or less expensive or have fewer side effects. But assuming those conditions are fulfilled, then the medical advice is sound and the church doesn't have a problem with sound medical advice. Now, there's a question when it comes to marijuana about how effective is it and what conditions might it be appropriate for? It is obviously a substance that affects the way your mind works, but there are lots of substances that do that. I mean, morphine does that, and doctors give patients morphine all the time because it's a pain reliever, and there are conditions in which you need serious pain relief. Morphine has some side effects, but there are situations where it's appropriate to use morphine. And in the same way, hypothetically, there could be situations where the medical use of marijuana is appropriate. However, because the medical marijuana movement in this country has been part of a broader movement towards pushing for its recreational use, there's some question about, well, how effective is it really? Is this just a cover for recreational use? And that's something that is whether there are legitimate uses for it medically is an empirical question. And it's one that I'm not a doctor. I haven't studied the evidence. I can't give you an opinion on that. I can sketch out the principles that are involved in when use of a treatment, including a narcotic, is appropriate. But then there are appropriate situations medically for the use of narcotics, like morphine, to mention just one. In terms of recreational use, the problem there is that when people use marijuana or alcohol or anything in a way that deprives them of their ability to make moral decisions, then they are – and they're doing it just for fun, not because there's a compelling reason like I need to have surgery. But they're doing it just for fun and they're depriving themselves of their capacity for moral reason. That's something that of itself is sinful because it puts you in the proximate occasion of committing sins, potentially even grave sins, like when a person gets drunk on alcohol and goes out driving. Okay. Yeah. That would be an example. In terms of marijuana, I'm not aware of a specific position paper that's been taken on this. However, the church in general opposes the legalization of recreational use of narcotics. And so that's the calculus that would likely be applied in this situation. Now, there can be situations where a law, even though it's a good idea in principle, could be producing really bad effects in society. For example, when the United States tried to outlaw alcohol, you know, in almost all circumstances during Prohibition, that produced some really negative consequences, including the rise of organized crime. And so now the use of alcohol is not in principle problematic as long as it's used in moderation. But the United States experienced the problems of a law that a lot of people thought had a good moral justification, but it had really bad consequences. It ended up getting repealed. So the question of legalization of recreational use of marijuana or any other narcotic is something the church is going to be opposed to in principle. However, if there were really horrendous problems being caused by it, then there could be some discussion of that question.
We'll have to leave it there. Jim, I hope that was helpful to you. We got to take a break. We'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
We'll be right back with more great answers from Jimmy today on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett, host of Catholic Answers Live, and I'm looking forward to meeting you this September 28th to 30th at our 4th Annual National Apologetics Conference here in beautiful San Diego. This is one conference you are not going to want to miss. The theme is the reunion of all Christians, and we've got an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to fire you up. Catholic historian Steve Weidenkopf, apologist Mark Brumley, apologist Devin Rose, plus all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. For almost four decades, Catholic Answers has been engaging our separated brethren in charity to bring them to the fullness of the truth. Join us for a lively and inspiring conference designed to help you play an active part in the reunion of all Christians. This is where it all begins. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite and inform your faith. Seats are available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register.
This is apologist Tim Staples, and I'm here to tell you about the most exciting and innovative Catholic book in years. In today's world, people from countless perspectives pose challenges to our Catholic faith every day. In conversations, through the mass media, on the internet, and more on the infinite collection of social media platforms, there's no getting away from this daily onslaught. We as Catholics need to stand strong to be prepared to mount a daily defense, to respond to the many challenges that we as believers are presented with every day. To that end, my good friend and apologist extraordinaire Jimmy Akin has come up with what will surely be a go-to resource for years to come, a daily defense. A daily defense takes up a different challenge for every day of the year, 366 in all, teaching you how you can defend the faith and give answers to Catholics and skeptics alike. And it's user-friendly, with challenges and answers indexed alphabetically by scripture verses or by topic, so finding the answers can be quick and easy. Order your copy of A Daily Defense today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thank you for being with us today. 2 hours of open forum today. This hour, Jimmy Akin is with us, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and prolific author of many, many things, including A Daily Defense, his latest book. And if you want that A Daily Defense, I didn't mention this before. We mentioned the book, but you can get it at Catholic.com. You just go to Catholic.com and you can buy it there.
You mentioned I'm the author of many things. And in the old days, back when my book Mass Confusion was in print, people could introduce me as the author of Mass Confusion. Then I'd say, and I have a book by that name.
In my case, you often are the author of Mass Confusion. Mm-hmm. It takes me a minute. Uh-huh. I guess that's not mass because I'm not a mass myself.
It's more like men confusion.
It's a one dude temporary confusion. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. And if we are not able to get you in this hour, just hang on. We'll get you in the next hour. Anonymous, listening or watching on YouTube Live, you are on with Jimmy Akin. What's your question?
Hi.
Hi.
Howdy.
I have a question. Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. What's your question?
Okay, sorry. I was just wondering about baptism.
Okay.
I understand, I'm trying to figure out this. I'm from in the Coptic Orthodox Church, which I'm a part of, we have, the standard baptism by immersion.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if there's any need to do something otherwise, if there's any reason to take an exception, we'll go by the exception.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was just wondering is just curiosity as to why, the Catholic Church, the standard is pouring instead of immersion.
It's just culture. That's the fundamental answer. The Catholic Church recognizes that both immersion and pouring are valid modes of baptism. That's something that has been recognized since the first century, because we have at least the mode of pouring mentioned as a valid mode in a document known as the Didache, which dates back to the first century. Both the validity of both modes is something that has been recognized widely down through history. However, presumably, because it can be a little awkward to immerse a baby, and baptism is normally performed with babies, or most frequently performed with babies in the Latin rite of the Church, it ended up being the less common mode. However, the Church does acknowledge that immersion is a more expressive way of symbolizing the action of God in baptism and the washing away of our sins. So if you look in the Church's current documents, there's even kind of a little preference for immersion where it's possible and appropriate. But for historical cultural reasons, it is not the most common form of administration of baptism, and it tends to go to the fact that it's a little harder to immerse a baby than it is an adult. Now, that's not to say you can't immerse a baby. In fact, my understanding is in many branches of Christianity, and it may be this way in the Coptic Orthodox Church, but in many branches of Christianity, babies are immersed. And so it's certainly possible. It may cause a little more ruckus than it would just pouring, although even pouring can cause a little bit of a ruckus with a baby.
Yeah. And I said, we do that immerse babies as well.
Uh-huh.
I was just curious, interested in, like, the difference and, like, why that was the case. But thank you.
No problem. It's basically just a cultural difference just because of how things evolved. But both are fine.
Thank you, Anonymous. And Jimmy, I didn't mean to laugh during the answer, but I don't know another program anywhere where a grown man would say it can be a little awkward to immerse a baby. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
In the context, it makes perfect sense, but just to hear it,
There are certain sentences. Actually, I keep an eye out for sentences that likely have never been uttered before in human history.
Now, that one might have.
My guess is that one probably has.
But not very much.
But there are some that haven't. Someday I'll bring in a really interesting sentence that has never been prior to it being written, it had never been uttered in human history. But it's a really interesting sentence.
All right. I want to hear that one. But it can be a little awkward, too.
From a book I have on linguistics.
Immerse a baby. Yeah. Austin in Des Moines, Iowa, you are on with Jimmy Akin. What's your question?
Hey, my wife and I have been invited over to his friend's house with five other couples,
mm-hmm.
Friday and Lent, this Friday.
Okay.
And meat is going to be served,
mm-hmm.
It's the main dish. Just wondering a couple things, how to handle it. They're all Catholic, too, which is frustrating. But we're the only two, I think, that object.
Mm-hmm.
If we did go and we ate meat, is that a mortal sin?
Okay.
And I guess just looking for maybe guidance on how we handle this. Do we just go there and eat a salad? Do we, object and kind of be the stick out, the holier than thou couple.
Okay.
Well,
so let's deal with the first question first. The church's regulations for this are found in, at least in terms of universal law, are found in a document that was released by Pope Paul VI back in the 1960s called Penitemini. And in Penitemini, the Pope reordered the church's penitential discipline, including the discipline of fasting and abstinence, which is what this is, abstinence from meat. And he indicated that the substantial observance of the church's penitential laws does bind gravely. And so if you were to fail to substantially observe them and do so knowingly and deliberately, then that would constitute a mortal sin. However, the fact that he chose to say substantial observance, that the substantial observance of these laws binds gravely, that suggests that under the current law, there is some flexibility, that one could deviate from the letter of the law in an insubstantial or non-substantial way, and it wouldn't be gravely sinful. And if you look at commentators on this, some of them will talk about a single exception, wouldn't be a substantial failure to observe the laws and their spirit. And so I could imagine commentators saying that it would be okay in this situation, since you're not in control of the food that's being served and you don't want to be rude to these people and you could even push them away from the church. So I could imagine some commentators taking that position. I could also imagine saying this is an opportunity to help these people take their faith more seriously and doing so in a nice way. I, as someone who for many years has eaten low carb, am used to being the stick out at social gatherings. And my strategy at such events is to bend over backwards to make other people relaxed and having a good time and not make an issue out of my particular dietary practice. And so that's something that you also might could do. You could also just talk to the host in advance and say, hey, by the way, it's a Friday coming up and it's during Lent. Are you going to have an option for fish or for non-meat? Or maybe we could bring something of our own to contribute to the party. And then you and and your wife would have the opportunity to bring something and give other people at the party a non-meat option.
Maybe macaroni and cheese.
Or something.
I just thought.
Non-meat.
Yeah. 888-318-7884 is the number. More with Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live. Next hour, Patrick Madrid will be in here. Thank you very much, Jimmy Akin.
Thank you very much, Cy Kellett.
It was a pleasure. We'll see you in a few minutes right back here on Catholic Answers Live.